The Supreme Court this week issued its ruling in the important Town of Greece versus Galloway case. In their first major decision on this issue of prayer at public gatherings since the 1980s, the justices ruled in favor of the upstate New York suburb of Rochester and against what many of us understand to be the cornerstone of religious liberty, participation in our government process without being required to be a part of an overtly sectarian prayer. Interfaith Alliance was a co-signer of an amicus brief in support of the respondents, along with the American Civil Liberties Union, the New York Civil Liberties Union, and the Anti-Defamation League. And I'm very pleased now to welcome Rabbi David Saperstein, director of the Religious Action Center for Reform Judaism, which also filed a brief in the case. Welcome back to State of Belief Radio, David.
Always an honor to be with you all.
Were you surprised?
Well, surprised is a tough word here. Very disappointed. We've seen the arc of the last 25 years of court decisions to be the slow dismantling of the wall separating church and state, and this is just another piece of that.
Yeah.
This makes three cases in which a Roberts Court has considered the Establishment Clause side of our religious protections, and in each time it has weakened the protections of separation of church and state.
Right. Well, let's start with a quick overview of the case itself. Despite the Town of Greece claiming to offer opportunities for various faiths to be represented, the track record of opening prayers at their town meetings is almost unanimously and overtly Christian. Will you comment on that?
That's absolutely accurate. They had done only Christian prayer until legal action was begun against them, and then they did invite some other faith traditions to offer prayers. But as I understand it, as soon as the record was closed in this case, in the end, since that time, they've only invited Christian prayers again. So that's clearly the pattern, and that differentiates it from a number of prior cases that the court had considered regarding school prayer that had more diverse prayer. And in most of those, even there, the court had often struck down.
Knowing
government prayer.
Knowing how much people respect your opinions, David, tell up our listeners why this case was so important to the Religious Action Center and what your involvement was in commenting on it.
For a number of national religious denominations and civil liberties groups, all cases that deal with the free exercise clause or the establishment clause are important to us because you never know when the court is going to analyze the case in a way that will affect things far beyond the specific facts before the court. So in this case, we have fought for a long time against school prayer, against prayer in most government settings. This was in a new area that had not been considered by the court before, which was the local town council, the kind of legislative body in America in which people directly interact with it, come before it, present their cases, et cetera. It's almost closer to a court setting than it is to, let's say, a state legislature, or the United States Congress, where when they begin with ceremonial prayer, it is primarily for those people who are the elected officials, not the people coming to do business before them.
Well, building on that, David, how broadly do you see the applications for this ruling playing out?
No one knows. The last time that the court evaluated legislative prayer, in the Marsh case 30 years ago, it did so on grounds that was different than any other test that the Supreme Court had used, which was historical precedent. It said, we've always had prayer in legislatures and the Congress, and therefore we can continue to have it. it did point out, and I believe in a footnote, that the prayer there was non-sectarian prayer, and clearly marked that as one consideration for the court. What this was different, why this was different, was this was clearly not non-sectarian prayer. And now that prayer has been upheld. We can expect in other government settings now to hear sectarian prayer of all kinds that are going to be deeply troubling to people who are before that legislative body, or we could have court prayer now, in which, you know, people are subject to sectarian prayer who don't accept those values, and it puts them in a very awkward position. They don't want to stand up and walk out. They don't want to sit while others are standing, because the very people who have kind of endorsed the prayer are the people that they've got to pitch their business to. And therefore, they're caught between being coerced by pressure to participate in the prayer or to risk adverse reaction to their not participating in the prayer. Yeah. So this really has wide implications. We don't know the extent of it yet, but it's deeply troubling in opening up a new chapter in which government-endorsed sectarian prayer could become a norm in American life.
Some of our listeners know that Rabbi Saperstein is also an attorney. David, as an attorney, do you think something was missed in the way the case was argued?
No, I actually thought that the argument was a strong argument. And the briefs, your brief, the briefs that we were involved with, I thought were made very strong arguments. I think all of the factors needed to be there. As we know, the court is divided 4-4 between those who uphold the Warren and Burger Court era decisions in a number of areas dealing with fundamental rights, including the areas of religion, and four who are willing to make significant changes in weakening a lot of the protections erected by the Warren and Burger Court. And Justice Kennedy, who wrote this decision, is often the swing vote. He has voted against school prayer in a number of cases. Here, as frankly have a couple of the other judges on the more conservative side. But with adults, the court has always been a little more lax in this setting. And the Justice Kennedy wrote a decision in which she agreed it would be allowed. I don't think it was because anything was missed in the argument. And even Kennedy himself shows that he's troubled by the Pandora's box that might be open. He said at one point in the case, he says, you know, this would be a different case if the prayer was demeaning to non-believers or minority religions, threatening damnation, encouraging conversion. But that is not the case before us, and therefore we're going to uphold this.
Yeah.
Well, it means he recognizes that there are lines that have to be drawn, which is ironic since the very reason he didn't want to use sectarian versus non-sectarian prayer as a standard before the court is it would involve courts all across the country being involved in arguments about what was sectarian and what was non-sectarian prayer. A very strong point. One of the reasons that many of us had deep concerns about any kind of legislative prayer. So he's right on that. On the other hand, he recognizes that if you're not going to differentiate between sectarian and non-sectarian, then it could open up abuses that might require the court to get involved. So they're not going to avoid the line drawing one way or the other. I wish they had left it in the way it's been for the last 60 years in a much more limited ceremonial deism type approach that is far more inclusive and broader in encompassing America.
David, I think we both know that there are some majority religious groups that are celebrating the court's decision. Is this going to encourage the majority religions in the nation to further press for rights that result in the exclusion of some people who are a part in the public square?
You know, obviously it will. I mean, first of all, it sounds like there's no limit in the ability of the legislative body to simply pick and choose people on whatever criteria to give offer prayers on whatever criteria they want, which would include their religious identity, practices, or beliefs. That's deeply troubling to the government To be favoring one religion over another religion.
Mm-hmm.
So, that means that people who don't share those religious beliefs are going to be deeply troubled by this, to face a government that makes them feel like outsiders, which in Senator O'Connor's endorsement test is exactly the criteria to be measured by and to be avoided. That no one by actions of their government on the basis of religious grounds should be made to feel like an outsider in America. And that is exactly what the court now has threatened to make the norm in American life by allowing for almost no limits on the kind of prayer or the choices of legislatures of the kind of prayer that would be that we will be hearing.
You said in the very beginning that the last three cases now that have been heard are showing this steady erosion of the separation of church and state. It's time for people who really believe that that is the way to maintain religious liberty to be worried and to be more active. That's an understatement, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yes, it is true. In the Salazar case, upholding the cross, the public cross, in the Arizona tuition case, that greatly limited the standing of people to contest government endorsement of religious practices and on the Establishment Clause grounds. And now this case, we see significant weakening, and we should be deeply concerned. And you said it exactly right, Welton, as you've said so eloquently over the years. And the fact is, it is the wall separating church and state that has kept government out of religion and allowed religion to flourish with the diversity and strength in America, unmatched anywhere in the democratic world, where there is government-endorsed religion, sponsored religion, established religion. And we have been the beneficiaries of that protection that the wall separating church and state has afforded us. For the small-time gains, this is really selling our birthright for a bowl of porridge. Mm. Whatever the gain is about having your prayer now allowed here and getting a certain amount of government money, whatever it is in tearing down this wall, in the end, we'll end up with a very different country with arguments between religious groups over whose prayers will now be heard and whose prayers won't be heard. Who will get government endorsement and who won't? Who will get government money and who won't? We're going down a very dangerous path. And, you know, there clearly seems to be a fifth vote on the court with Alito replacing Senator Dale O'Connor about greatly expanding government funding of religious activities as well here, or at least going to pervasively sectarian, money going to pervasively sectarian institutions like churches and parochial schools for their for the secular parts of their program. We're looking at a very different America than we've known for in the last 60 years that's seen such an extraordinary growth in religious life. And I think those who are satisfied today about this decision will be deeply troubled by the long-term implications.
Rabbi David Saperstein is director of the Religious Action Center of Reform Judaism. He's a longtime board member of Interfaith Alliance. He is a dear friend of mine. He is a colleague who is concerned, like many of us are, and he is a leading voice for maintaining the wall of separation between church and state. David, thanks so much, as always, for being with us today. You enlighten us and you inspire us. Thanks for being with us.